Evening. I got a phone call at around 6 p.m., a little before 6 p.m., a phone call that was followed a number of urgent text messages that went something along the following. Hi, Rabbi Orlean. I'm supposed to be having a barbecue tonight for my coworkers. I promised them a barbecue, and I just realized, do I have to make a siyum? So I responded, yes. So then the follow-up question was, okay, what could I be mesayim in the next 2 hours? So I responded something like, well, if you learned Maseches Tamid about 12 times like Rabbi Kalish, you could probably do it in the next 2 hours. And he responded that that's not the case. Could I make a mission, see him on, no, I think the question was, oh, do you mean Maseches Tamid Mishnayis? I said, no, I don't mean Maseches Tamid Mishnayis, I mean Maseches Tamid Gemara. So it happened to be that I was working on my preparation for right now, and that's exactly what I want to speak about. What is necessary for a siyum? And this is a halacha that's nogeir now, and it's also a halacha that's nogeir for Erev Pesach regarding Tanis Bechoros. What constitutes a siyum to qualify as to be able to eat an Erev Pesach and to have flesh tonight? So it seems, let's start like this. We generally assume that you need to learn a Maseches of Gemara, not of Mishnayos. I so quoted it again from Shmuel Kamenetsky's Sefer. He quotes, the author quotes a Shas that is Pri HaSada, who brings about four reasons why it has to be a Gemara, a Masechta of Gemara, not a Masechta of Mishnayos. As we go through these four reasons, you'll find none of them are really compelling in and of itself. They're just sort of feelings, not really raya. So he says the following. He was asked this, I don't know who Shas HaTshuva's Pri HaSada is, I found it on my Otzar HaChachma, but that Otzar HaChachma has 100,000 svarim, so I don't know who this author is. So he was asked, if somebody finishes Maseches the Mishnayos and not Gemara, could he make a siyum regarding Tainus and Erev Pesach? So the first point he says, the very fact that we eat a Seuda, make a siyum on Erev Pesach, and allow us to eat, allow the Bechorim to eat, the Bechorim to eat on Erev Pesach, that itself is a Chiddush. And therefore we shouldn't add a Chiddush on top of a Chiddush. You shouldn't, as it is, it's a leniency enough to say that we'll be willing to be Mesayim Maseches Gemara and allow eating there, but certainly not to take even further. Then he says, Lashon Mesechta, which is the Lashon that the Ramah says, for example, in the Poskim use, the Ramah says explicitly when you make finish a Mesechta, you make a Siyum. Lashon Mesechta Mashma Yoser in Gemara. It's more Mashma, when we use the word Mesechta, that's more Mashma Gemara, that you finish Gemara, not a set of Mishnayos. Why? Why is the word Mesechta more mashma Mesechta of Gemara than Mesechta of Mishnayos? That's not really a compelling argument. Even though Mishnayos are also called a Mesechta, that's in the olden days when they knew the perish of the Gemara on the Mishnah. But for us, when we just learn Mishnayos and we don't really know the whole Shakla Vitaria, the whole back and forth of the Amoraim, discussing each Mishnah, so that's not called a Mesechta. Okay, maybe, yeah, maybe not. Also not compelling. And then he just sort of repeats himself and says, the Ramah who says that when you finish a Masechta, you're supposed to make a Seuda, that's only referring to if you finish the Masechta of Gemara. So again, he doesn't really bring any proofs why the word Masechta or that a Siyum has to be only for a Masechta of Gemara, but that's what he clearly holds, that it's not for a Masechta of Mishnah, it's only for a Masechta of Gemara. But the author of that, from Shmuel Kamenetsky, he actually brings an interesting proof that maybe a Masechta of Mishnah should work. Not like the Sefer Pri HaSada that I just shared with you. Why would Mishnayos work? Because there's a story recorded in Gemara and Shabbos. Abai says the following. He says, whenever I see a Tzurva Meirabanan, a yeshiva boy, who finished the Masechta, this is what Abai is saying, and it's important to listen to that it was Abai. You'll see why in a minute. Whenever I see a boy in yeshiva, a yeshiva boy, a Tzurva Meirabanan, to Shalom Masechta, Avidna Yoma Tavla Rabban, I would make a yontif. So he says, when I see a yeshiva guy make a siyum on a mesechta, that's the word that's used, I would make a yontif. Now, in the time of Abaye, Abaye and Rava were actually the late Amoraim. Were there mesechtos of Gemara that were already arranged at that point? It's true they were later Amoraim, but they were Amoraim. It's not really clear. It might be that there were no mesechtos of Gemara arranged as you and I know it. So what was Abaye saying? When I meet a Talmud Chacham who made a Siyum, who finished a mesechta, what kind of mesechta was he talking about? If when he lived, there was no organized mesechta, certainly not mesechta as we know, there's presumably no organized mesechta of Gemara. So what did he mean when he said that I would meet a Talmud Chacham who's finished a mesechta, I would make a yontif? Presumably he means a mesechta of Mishnayos. Presumably, that's a nice raya. That's an interesting raya. Question is that maybe that was only in the olden days in Abayis time when that's all there was. There was only Mishnah and the Shach of the time, but there wasn't any codified, canonized corpus of sugyas that are put on the Mishnah, so there only was Mishnah, so there's nothing else to speak of. But nowadays that we have a Masechta of Gemara, maybe Mishnah wouldn't be enough. But that's an interesting proof. Bottom line, although it seems that the majority of the poskim say that me'ikr hadin of siman and mishnayos would probably be sufficient according to ikr hadin, the minagom is clearly not like that. The minagom clearly is that one does need to make a siyum on a mesechta of shas. So this guy is, he said he wants to make a barbecue. So I said, milchik barbecue, ? So he said, no, flesh. He missed my point. What's that? Say the Mishnayos. The minig is that it is good, yeah. Why? How does it fit into this? So maybe we'll talk about tomorrow night some other understandings of when one can make a siyum. Good evening. Last night we mentioned the question as to what constitutes a siyum during the 9 days. Is it sufficient to be mesayim only a mesecht of Mishnayos? We said that even though halacha might permit that, but the minhag olam is not like that. I want to raise a different question that was nogeh halacha maisa for me tonight. I had two dinner invitations. One was to a nice milchika dinner, and one was to a fleishika dinner. So I wanted to, of course, not give up the fleishka dinner. On the other hand, they were both scheduled for the same time, and the other one had one of the Gdolei America was speaking. I didn't want to miss him either. So the question is as follows. Could you partake of the meat if you miss the actual siyum? Right? The siyum's at, let's say, 5:45, 6 o'clock, and you get there at 6:30. So could you participate at the siyum? So some of the people in this room heard this already tonight, so you get to get some chazara. So halacha is the following, that when it comes to a siyum on Erev Pesach, the Tainus Bechoros, there, that which permits the Bechoros, the Bechorim, to eat, is the fact that they heard a siyum. Not that the fact that it was a suda, that there was a suda smith, that they participated in it, but the fact that they heard a siyum, that siyum is what was matu for them to eat, and therefore continued to eat for the rest of the day on Erev Pesach. Ma she'en kein, the heter to have a siyum and to eat meat during the 9 days, is not because you hear a siyum. It's that there's a su'udas mitzvah, and a su'udas mitzvah during the 9 days is permitted to have meat. So if there would be a bris, for example, and in Eretz Yisrael, I remember in Eretz Yisrael, when I was learning Eretz Yisrael, most of the brisim are, except the Americans, all the brisim are chicken and potatoes and green beans. It's a fleishka meal. So if you have a bris during the 9 days, you can have fleishchus. It's not the siyum shabbos, it's the fact that there's a sudas mitzvah. So if there is a sudas mitzvah, whether you made it to the siyum or you didn't make it to the siyum, the meal that follows the siyum is still a sudas mitzvah. And therefore, if you go to participate in a sudas mitzvah, you can have the meat. So that's what I did tonight. I went to the dinner earlier, the milchka dinner, and I filled myself up with mozzarella sticks and salmon, which anyway, and some other cheesy things and some fettuccine. Then after that, I went to my next door neighbor for the siyum that he made, and I missed the siyum, but they were still sitting and participating in the Sudas Mitzvah, and I was able to participate in the Sudas Mitzvah with my piece of steak, and therefore, Baruch Hashem, I was able to have the best of both worlds and follow halacha while I'm doing it, which is even better. That's point number one. Point number two, what about the following? Let's say you have a child who finishes a child's learning Mishnayos. And he's learning Mishnayos Moed for his bar mitzvah. He's 11 years old, 11 and a half years old. And he finishes Seder Moed. So would the siyum of a child be sufficient to count as a siyum for which we could eat meat in joining the family, the father, the mother, the siblings, or the next door neighbors, or maybe the whole neighborhood? Could the participants eat meat if it's a siyum of a child? So Tzafnas Paneach, the Ragged Shaver, was asked this question. And in Shas Shu Tzafnas Paneach, he said, you know what it should depend on? It should depend on how we look at the Talmud Torah of a Katan. Do we look at the Talmud Torah of a Katan as real Talmud Torah? In which case, real Talmud Torah, real Siyam, so enjoy the flesh. Or Talmud Torah of a Katan is not really Talmud Torah, it's just there's a mitzvah chinuch for the father to do, so the father has to do whatever he has to do to make sure that his son grows up to be a God-fearing, Torah-observing Jewish person. So part of that is teaching his son Torah and Mishnayos and whatever else. But it's not a Talmud Torah per se, Talmud Torah with a capital TT, that the child is therefore fulfilling. That's the chakira that the Ragged Shaver presents. And the same kind of question is really at root of a different question, which we talked about here a few weeks ago. That is, if a katan becomes bar mitzvah during Sfira, did the Sfira that he counted while he was a katan count for his Sfira? Was it a real Sfira? Was it a Maisa Sfira? So now that he becomes bar mitzvah in the middle of Sfira, he could continue counting. Can he continue counting with a bracha, which is a gigantic discussion in the post-gim. Rav Avadia has a tshuva the length of almost as long as Gullus. And that question really, fundamentally, is the same kind of question. When a child does a mitzvah, is he just fulfilling chinuch? Or is he fulfilling that mitzvah, in this case, Sfira? So Omer in that case, or in our case, is he actually fulfilling Talmud Torah? What is the maskun? I don't remember what the maskun of the Ragged Shaver is, but he says that's what it should be dependent on, as to whether the son, the child's Talmud Torah, is a real Talmud Torah, in which case that would warrant a seer. I want to finish off with a question. I don't know if we'll have time for the answer, but another question. I don't want to offend anybody. We have great respect.
What does Avadia Sev say about the sphere?
If I remember correctly, he's machmir. And he says that a katan cannot continue.
Then?
What?
Is there Shagas Arya?
Probably, because that's the kind of thing Shagas Arya. I don't remember what Shagas Arya says. I don't recall. I don't remember. But this is classical Shagas Arya material. So I would say probably, but I don't recall offhand. Just to finish up with one last question, that is, we have incredible respect for people who attend Daf Yomi. 7 days a week, 365 days a year, it's an incredible, incredible accomplishment. But at the same time, in education lingo, it's called passive learning. It's not active learning, it's passive learning. You sit there, and the Magid Shir talks and talks and talks and talks and talks, and you struggle and fight to stay awake, and that's your Talmud Torah. So you don't mumble any of the words. If you really read along with the Magid Shir, that's exceptional, it's wonderful. Most people who do participate in Daf Yomi listen, and they don't necessarily say the words along with the Magid Shir. So the question that we'll leave with ourselves with this evening, and maybe we'll answer it tomorrow night, is if a person learns only Behirhur mentally, without any verbal, active participation of learning, with their own mouth, with their own active participation, is learning Behirhur sufficient to make a siyum? So if you went to Daf Yom and you happened to go through three quarters or nine tenths of the Masechta just by listening to your Daf Yomi Rebbe, and then, okay, you're going to save the last Daf or two for this week, and you do the last Daf or two on your own, is that sufficient to make a siyum if you weren't actively, if you didn't actively read the words of the Masechta? Maybe tomorrow night we'll have time to speak about that. So last night we asked the Shaila, the very uncomfortable Shaila, of what happens to all of the tzaddikim who are sitting in the Daf Yomi Shir and listening and struggling to keep awake while the Magid Shir teaches, and they listen. So is that passive learning of sitting in the Daf Yomi Shir sufficient to make a siyum, or do you have to actively learn the sugya, learn the Masechta with your mouth, to read it actually, in order to make a siyum? That's the question. So this boils down to a much more fundamental question, and that is the din of Talmud Torah Behirhur. Is it considered Talmud Torah if a person contemplates or thinks about learning? So you're going to say, of course it is, you're thinking and learning, right? It's not so pashut, because if you open up a Shulchan Aruch, to the very beginning of the Shulchan Aruch, to Siman Mem Zayin, where it talks about Birchas HaTorah, the Shulchan Aruch paskins black on white, that for Hirhur, for thinking, for contemplating, for reading Torah with your eyes, and not with your mouth, without articulating Torah, then you do not need to recite a Birchas HaTorah. So the simple reading of that Shulchan Aruch is that it's not called Torah if you don't say it with your mouth. If you don't, of course, the Ikur Torah is Havana, but still, it doesn't have a chalas shem, a din, Talmud Torah, if you don't articulate it, or if you're not motzi et bepeh in some way, shape, or form. That's what the Achronim understand to that this line of the Shulchan Aruch says, that you don't have to say Berachas HaTorah for Hirhur, for thinking about Torah. The famous question that if you listen to a shir before davening, you do not have to say Berachas HaTorah. It's explicit in the Shulchan Aruch. Correct. That is correct. That's the halacha in first and Shulchan Aruch. No, because after you say Berachas HaTorah, you usually say Yevarechecha. If you wouldn't say Yevarechecha, that would be more complicated. So we say Yevarechecha for that purpose. All the Achronim ask the following question, that there's a stira, because the next line in the Shulchan Aruch says that if you write Divrei Torah, Ksivas Divrei Torah does require Birchas HaTorah. So all the Achronim jump on the Shulchan Aruch and say, you seem to be contradicting yourself. You're saying that thought does not require Birchas HaTorah, but the next line you write that Ksiva, which is, it's not an articulation, it's not a speech, it's thought. There you do require Talmud Torah, there you do require Birchas HaTorah. That is considered, that does constitute Talmud Torah. And that's a question that the Nosei Kalem, the commentators on the Shulchan Aruch, ask this stira, that all the Mefarshim on the Shulchan Aruch ask this contradiction. So, before we even get to that contradiction, which we'll talk about in just a moment, on that first halacha, when the Shulchan Aruch paskins, yeah, but it's not a dibur. Yeah, you do an action. Yeah, why is that significant? We'll have to say, still hear her. It's not an Amir, so we'll see why that's significant. Of course, you're going to be right, but we'll have to see why that's significant. So even before we get to that contradiction in the Shulchan Aruch, on the very line when the Shulchan Aruch says that you do not need to make a bracha on hear her, that listening to a shir does not require a bracha, the Gra, in the Beir HaGra, the Shulchan Aruch, says, Ani lo mevin et zeh. I don't understand this line of the Shulchan Aruch. What do you mean you don't have to recite a bracha on Torah, that Torah in your mind is not considered Torah? What's the chiyuv of learning Torah? Vagisa bo yom v'alayla. It's a pasuk not in Chumash, but in Tanakh. Vagisa bo, what does the word hagaha mean? Not yigia with an ayin. L'hagos, hegyon libi, right? Yil ratzon imreifi v'hegyon libi. What does hegyon mean? The thoughts, the contemplations of my mind. So says the Gra, we have a Mefarsha, the whole chiyuv of Talmud Torah is v'hagisa bo yom v'alayla, and v'hagisa means thought. So therefore, the Gra argues on the Shulchan Aruch, and the Gra says that yes, thought does require a bracha. And therefore, it's clearly, according to the Gra, that thought does require a bracha, and therefore, clearly, thought, hegyon ha-Torah, is Talmud Torah with a capital TT. Of course, according to the Gra, you would have to say Brichas HaTorah on Torah, and equally, if you're sitting in a shir, even if you don't say a word, of course, you can make a siyum. That would certainly be, of course, sufficient. What? Baruch Hashem, yes. For those who follow the Gra. In Hungary, they follow the Gra? Romania or Hungary? Depends if he's like the Chasim Sofer or not like the Chasim Sofer. So, I'd like to share with you an Aruch HaShulchan who makes an incredible point that shows that this Gra, who has an explicit pasuk, seems to have missed the boat, if we could say such words. Says the Aruch HaShulchan, you have many usages of the word higayon, yehegeh, in Tanakh. Guess what? Whenever it refers to thought, it always says hegyon libi. Or, for example, another bunch of times, Lev tzadik yehegeh, the heart of a tzadik will think. Shod yehegeh libam, the evil people will have thoughts in their heart. When the Torah wants to say, when Tanakh wants to say thought, it doesn't just say v'hagisa, it says hegyon halev. And therefore, it says the Aruch HaShulchan, and he brings lots and lots of psukim. And therefore, says the Aruch HaShulchan, if the Torah just says v'hagisa bo yom v'alayla, and it doesn't say v'hagisa bo lev yom v'alayla, that means the Torah says v'hagisa bo means bedibur. Not like the Gras said. It means v'hagisa bo means bedibur, and therefore the Aruch HaShulchan posits, that's why the Shulchan Aruch did make sense, not like the Gras critique, and therefore for the Ikur Talmud Torah, like v'hagisa bo, v'hagisa means with a dibur. If the Torah wanted to say something that had to do with thought or heart, it would say v'hagisa b'lev, or something like that. Which it doesn't in the case of Talmud Torah.
The Torah wants to tell you the same stuff.
So you're saying even more so, like the Shulchan Aruch, that you have to articulate with your mouth, because it says v'dibarta
bo. No, because it says v'dibarta bo, so that's one thing. Then Tanakh, it says v'hagisa bo, it's not saying v'dibarta.
No, v'gisa bo yom v'layla, the sheer, how much do you need a dibatim of v'gisa bo yom v'layla?
What? It's either.
No, there's a pasuk in Chumash and there's a pasuk in Tanakh to clarify that.
No, but if it's in Hegel, you would say, you have to think about it.
V'gisa means both. V'gisa. Means both. But maybe it means only dibur. Like, again, I don't want to go through the 10 psukim, so he brings 5 psukim on each side to show that says... I'm not getting to the Chasam Sofer. Yeah. Not getting to the Chasam Sofer. So either way, I'm just going to get to the punchline because we have to daven. I have in 30 seconds. The Aruch HaShulchan says, although the Ikur Talmud Torah is indeed bepeh, the Ikur Talmud Torah is indeed bepeh, as the pasuk v'hagisa bo, which does not say lev, indicates. V'hagisa in its raw form indicates that there's a speech, there's an articulation. Nevertheless, it still is, of course, a kim of Talmud Torah, even if you don't say it, and therefore, accordingly, the Aruch HaShulchan paskins that the bracha of Birchas HaTorah was only established on the ideal, pristine form of Talmud Torah, which is Bipeh, says the Aruch HaShulchan. However, of course, even if you have a lesser form of Talmud Torah, the form only of Machshava Belev without the articulation, that's still a Talmud Torah, but albeit not in the highest form. And therefore, the higher form is that which Chazal or Misak in the Birchas HaTorah. So Birchas HaTorah is on the higher form of Torah, of speech. But even if a person thinks in Torah, which is not speech, and therefore it doesn't warrant a Birchas HaTorah, it is, of course, still considered Talmud Torah. And therefore, Allah HaLamayis, of course, you can recite Birchas HaTorah when you sit in a shir at a daf yomi, even if you kept your mouth closed, the entire Masechta. One fabulous raya to this, a fabulous raya that I saw brought down. Where did I see it? Brought down. I don't remember where I saw it brought down. Maybe in Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky's Sefer. We make a siyum. We celebrate Simchas Torah. I'm over time, so this is already just fun. We celebrate a siyum at Simchas Torah. What's the source for Simchas Torah? What's the source that you should make a siyum when you finish Torah? The Beis Yosef says, among other sources, Shlomo HaMelech, after he had his dream, where he got all of the Chachma from, as a gift from Hashem, he went to the Beis HaMikdash and brought Karbanos and made a party. Shlomo HaMelech had a what? He had a dream. And because of that dream, he made a party. That's the source for a siyum, that we make a siyum when you finish a Masechta. Because Shlomo HaMelech had a dream where he got Chachma, and therefore he went to make a party on a dream. You don't talk, you're dreaming. You see from that source of Shlomo HaMelech, if that is the source indeed for a siyum, you see that to make a siyum, you don't need a dibur bepeh, it's enough to have something passive as well.